Welcome to the Green Architects Lounge podcast. Once again, I'm Chris Briley.
And I'm Phil Kaplan. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Phil. How you doing?
I am really happy at the moment.
Well, is that the cocktail that's causing
it's a little bit of the cocktail. It's a little bit that it's summer. It's finally here. And,
thank God.
Oh, man, it's taken a long time.
It has for us. It was one heck of a winter.
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, even through, you know, June, it's like the 50s during the day, and it's just...
I know. Not
what the what?
What the what? I've been out sailing, working on my tan. No.
You got a long way to go, my friend. Keep working.
Yeah.
You got a little sun there.
Not enough. No, but you know, I actually try to not stay out in the sun too much because I'm fair. And I burn and will grow cancer on my face if I... No, I don't know. I don't know, but...
You know, we come from... the Kaplans are a long line of olive-skinned men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dark-complected. Tall, dark, and handsome-ish. Yeah.
Very short, dark, and happy. How about that?
That's awesome. Happy is the best. Who gives a... about this. I mean, who gives a... I just got beeped by Sheila. It's been a while. Thank you, Sheila, for beeping me.
She's quiet in the background, but we still rely on her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, otherwise this wouldn't happen, because God knows you and I don't... We never find enough time to get together. So we could stammer on and on about what we do, but you guys want to hear about architecture, so...
You know what I'd like to hear first about?
No, what? This cocktail?
This cocktail.
Sweet. All right, you know what we're doing? Folks, this is a good old-fashioned whiskey sour. Now... This, I know you're thinking, whiskey sour, I had
boring.
That. Yeah, I had that in college, and it sucked. It was, you know.
I had it in college without the sour, usually. We didn't even bother with them.
Well, then, here's the thing. If someone says, let's have whiskey sours, and that lemon flavor is coming from a plastic lemon with a green top, mm-hmm. or worse, a pouch with a little mix or something like that.
That's right.
Don't do that
mix.
because look over your shoulder, because in just a second, Big Joey Tuna, we're going to send over Big Joey the Tuna, and he's going to slap that drink out of your hand. He's going to be like, what are you doing? You know, be a man, for God's sakes. What are you drinking, like a college student?
Sours mix?
Yeah. Ugh. Anyway, here's what you do. Get some fresh summer lemons.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a real cocktail aficionado, you will make some simple syrup, which is basically equal parts water and confectioner sugar or real sugar. For this cocktail, I kind of winged the proportions. Mm-hmm. You know, I did all right.
So if you're Mr. Boston and you weren't into winging.
I'll tell you exactly what Mr. Boston.
As opposed to Mr. Briley.
Right. If Mr. Boston was actually measuring, he'd tell you 1 ounce lemon juice, half a teaspoon of either super fine sugar or simple syrup, and 2 ounces of whiskey with an EY, because that's how the Europeans spell it. Actually, that's also how they spell in Kentucky, so. And that's what we're having.
But it's, we're not having bourbon.
No, we're having
whiskey.
We're having Jack Daniel's number 7 in here, so.
I'm a fan.
I am too,
it's
actually.
It's an old school classic. It's a little sweeter than a typical whiskey.
That's right. You can go with some
corn.
You can go with some Jameson, and that'd be very nice in this as well. So, but have fun. But we're all American over here. So that's what we're having. I'm sure
it's the good lemon that's the key.
Yeah, yeah. Grew this in my backyard.
And the great whiskey just puts it over the top.
Yeah. So cheers, Phil. Here we go. Let's do this podcast.
What are we doing today, Chris?
I'll tell you what. Don't be an air hole, Phil.
I never would.
No, I know. So here's the deal. Phil and I, in 2013, we were on the fundamentals track at NESE for the Building Energy Conference.
And for those of you who don't know NESE, because it is a regional thing.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Northeast Sustainable Energy Association. It's a group, and we meet
annually
for a conference in Boston. Every year it's a Building Energy Conference. And we just started one in New York.
Oh, really?
2 years ago. Be Nice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
BENYC, which is...
Right.
Which has been really wonderful.
And I tell you what, those are the smartest people I've had. You know, I go to those things and I feel like a student again. But I also feel... It's a fantastic mix of feelings. you know, where I feel like I am both a teacher and a student simultaneously, like the whole time. And man, that feels great. It's, you know, it's humbling and inspiring all at the same time. And that's the way you walk away from that going, wow, we're on the right track. We're doing the right thing. I'm not alone. These are great people. Anyway, so right. good it's, plug for Nessie.
But. It is. And it's the thing that, Chris, you and I have learned so much from.
Oh, yeah.
That we use in our podcasts every time we come on here.
Yeah. So
so here we are. We were asked to do a Green Architects Lounge version
right.
of one of our shows for Building Energy Conference, which is flattering, and it was kind of fun.
Yeah, and it's been long enough that we thought now we can put it on the air and just share with you guys. But basically, it was fundamental, so it's like we're talking about basic things. So
yeah, so today, Chris, we're going to get back to basics.
That's right.
And we're going to talk to people about our 15
yeah.
top 10 things not to do.
Right. Don't blow these things when you're doing your project, guys. This is fundamental stuff. So don't be an air hole.
That's
so,
right.
So let's do this, Phil.
All right. So the, one of the questions we had was sprout follies. What's a sprout folly?
Oh,
we
yeah.
We had talked about this a while back when we had Martin Holiday on.
Oh, yeah. That's and, yeah. They called. From. Yeah. They said to us, hey, can you do like a sprout follies for
yeah.
us or whatever? And we said, yeah, heck yeah. So yeah. So a sprout. I'll tell you what a sprout is. A sprout is someone who's new to this green
right,
stuff.
Right. New. Newbie.
Because we all are. We all have been. You and I were sprouts once. But look at us now. Big towering trees.
It's hard. It's...
no, but
still breaking a limb every now and then. I don't know what that's about.
Yeah. Well, it's getting. It's growing old. That's what it is.
I think that is.
40s. Welcome to the 40s, there, buddy. But basically, when you're a sprout, what you want to be is you don't want to look like or talk like or act like a sprout because, you know, you're just, you know, you come off being a, you're like a sophomore, you know, it's like you think you know, you're walking around like you know everything when in fact everyone else is like, God, this guy barely knows anything
yeah.
thinks he does. But you don't want to be that guy.
We don't. So our goal is to say, all right, here's a number of really basic mistakes that sprouts need to look out for.
Right, don't be dumb. Yeah. So like, you know, like everyone out there has got a green brochure. Everyone out there is like a green person. I mean,
right. Everybody's website says now, oh yeah, we also do green.
Yeah.
Most of them don't integrate it in their
practice.
Work. They don't say, oh, we do this in everything. But
oh, you want to do a greenhouse? Oh, we can do a greenhouse.
We can do that also.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. What do you want to do? Yeah. We can do that. Absolutely. But you know, but it's like you also see in products. You know, water bottles. We use less plastic, so we're green. Jerks. Or diapers, or even what was the slide that we had? There was some big Hummer thing.
Right. Yeah. And you know, Citgo can be green. Oh yeah. We're
yeah.
Loyal, local.
Local.
Gas.
Sure you are.
Yeah.
Sure you are. Yeah. Green. All right.
And then you've got the website that has the green tab.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The little token.
They have a tab here that says they do green.
So they must be green.
Yeah, right.
So we want to make sure our architect is green. So,
right.
So luckily they have that. So but you hear all the time things like, what are they? Oh, like in our slide. I tell you what, guys, we're gonna attach our slides.
Yeah,
that's good. Do you want to share our slideshow?
Yeah, we should absolutely do that.
Yeah. So if you see our slideshows, I think we had mustaches. Were we wearing Martin's mustache?
I think we were. That's right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'm totally remembering now. We're pulling it up while we're talking. Oh yeah. We made a fictitious architectural firm.
Wash it and sponge them.
That's right. And curiously, they had a very familiar mustache.
That's right.
Both of those guys. And they said dumb things like, our houses breathe naturally. And what else? Oh, look, you can even do this.
We're green experts. We use the LEEDS system.
That's right. They use the
LEEDS.
S. LEEDS.
Yeah.
I still hear that out there. Well, we all know it's LEED without the S, but whatever. And we use efficient systems like geothermal and Radiance Labs. Yeah.
Whoa, sure.
You're cutting edge, buddy. You are.
You know, we use SIPS panels.
Oh, that's your biggest pet peeve, isn't it? Because the P.
Because the P stands for panels.
So why do you say SIP panels? Yeah, it's like saying structural insulated panels.
That's right.
Yeah. My brother has the same problem with ATM machines. Yeah. Automated teller machines. But you get the point, people. You know, basically, you want to just... you want to use your head. You want to be smart about things. So you want to do the
Our top 10 things not to blow. Number one, Chris, don't be an air hole.
Don't be an air hole. Are we going to make t-shirts?
I think we should.
That's our favorite, by the way.
If you want a t-shirt, let us know, and I think we're going to do a little cafe press thing.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll come up with a great graphic. It'll be awesome. The best that you and I can come up with in 15 minutes of our time. That'll be great. But it'll be, don't be an air hole.
All right. So air tightness in our buildings is really the most important thing that we can do.
Exactly.
In some ways, it's the lowest hanging fruit.
It is the lowest. I think we've said that many times that, you know, I think typically the average house, 25% of its heat loss is through air gaps in the envelope. And so that's cheap. That's just being tenacious with your air gun and your caulking and your sealing, you know, during construction. But also from a design standpoint, architecturally, it's also being very observant about your details.
Yeah. And in your details, what Chris and I are both doing, and both our firms are including line of air barrier and vapor barrier in our drawings in a different color.
Yeah.
Wow. Why do drawings have to be black and white anymore?
Well, I know. Well, because the color's more expensive to
print. Yeah, there's that.
I had a set of drawings for a veterinary clinic that you could not look at the mechanicals without it being in color. And did that make for an expensive set of drawings. But anyway, moving on.
But it really helped the process, I bet.
Well, it did. I mean, it wasn't pertaining to this, but it was all about ductwork. But for this, we're talking about having an air barrier, which I usually show in blue, and a vapor barrier, which is in red, whatever. And let's take a moment and talk about those two things, because probably if you're on Green Building Advisor, you've heard this to death, but there's a real difference between vapor barrier and air barrier. Barrier, you're trying to block air intrusion from the outside. You're trying to basically seal your house off from an air pressure standpoint. So the vapor barrier, you're trying to seal your house off from a vapor standpoint, vapor being a gas, the water molecule in a gas form. And basically, you've got vapor pressure on the inside of the house. If it's warm on the inside, cold on the outside, it's going to move from hot to cold. And you want to keep that moisture out of your wall assembly. So in most cases, you have a vapor barrier on the warm side of the wall, and you've got an air barrier on the cool side of the wall. And where you get in trouble, Phil, is where those assemblies, like I'm thinking about where your joists are resting on the wall, where different systems are coming together, that little line of barrier could get lost, and that ends up being where air comes in and out. So if you trace it and you see, aha, we need a continuous bead of caulk here, or we need a continuous gasket along this line, or we're gonna use our sheetrock as the air barrier, or vapor barrier, then you have to be thoughtful about that, diligent, and make sure that the building crew knows that too.
Well said. All right. And we've got some nice graphics to accompany this.
Yeah. I think in the slide, I've got an example of something you do too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right, number two, raise your glass.
That's right. Cheers, buddy.
Yeah. So we should be paying very close attention to the windows and the performance numbers in those windows. I think most people who are listening to this don't take that for granted.
Right.
But there are numbers that you should pay attention to closely and understand specifically what they mean. Solar heat gain coefficient, a U factor, and visible transmittance are the three that I think we usually speak of.
Yeah.
Very often.
For us, being in the cold climate, so heat gain coefficient's a big deal. Because if we're trying to do a passive house, for example, even a passive solar house, you need that heat gain. And so you need to know that on the south side, you want that heat to come in. And I wish we could go back in time and redo our windows podcast. In fact, we will redo it.
Yeah, we should do that.
Because back then, that was European windows were very, very new.
Right.
I remember I mentioned Bonneville as one of the projects, used in one of my projects. I'd never use them again.
And they don't exist.
Well, no, they do exist. They got bought out by another company, so they do exist, but they don't warranty certain products.
Oh, I know, Chris, because I have them in my house.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot. You have them in your house. Oh, wow. And how are they doing,
Dummy.
Phil? How are they doing?
They're doing fine, although a few need repairs. Yeah. It's not so easy to come by the parts.
Yeah, those guys suck. I'm sorry. Bonneville, yeah, whatever. Don't use those guys. And if they have a problem, they can call me and I'll tell them why. You know, they say, oh, but we're not the same window company. Yeah, well, the same name. And if you're dumb enough to by that same name. I'm sorry. And, it's the booze talking.
You were burned.
Right? Nah, I was burned. I was burned. My client was burned. That's the thing. So I'm mad about it.
I hear you.
There's nothing worse.
I know. You're right. Solar heat gain coefficient essentially goes from 0 to 1.
Yeah.
You know, we look for above a 0.5 if you're trying to get a high solar heat gain coefficient because you're trying to bring in that heat and trying to offset your heating loads. You know, sometimes you don't want to do that.
So if we were in Florida, we would want a low
because
solar heat gain coefficient.
That's right.
We're in a nothing but cooling climate.
We're going to stop that.
And I tell you what, when you get to 0.6 or higher, you're in fading furniture territory again, guys. You're back almost to single pane glass. I mean, that's impressive.
Right.
So that takes some glass technology of coatings that are, you know, use what, platinum and I don't know.
And you got to be careful with some of those too, because then you have to deal with overheating.
Right. Right. And they're not cheap. So you use them effectively where you can. All right. So
this is not a Windows podcast. We'll go into it more, but look at your numbers. Also know there are different kinds of glass. Cardinal makes a whole plethora of different glass. I don't know if plethora is the right word.
Yeah, I don't know. Plethora.
It's more of a handful.
Handful of glass. I mean, and not too long ago, they were just doing, you know, they were selling glass. The same window was being sold in Florida as it was in Maine. And that was very frustrating to the likes of you and I, but they're getting smarter. So if you don't want to be a sprout, then pay attention to your glass. And a window is not just a window.
That's right. And I will end it with this, Chris, is that if you're still on the edge of whether or not to specify triple glazing, if you're still afraid to say that to your clients, it's like getting caught in your throat.
Yeah.
Because you think they're going to get mad at you because it's going to be expensive. Just be bold about it. Say, listen, if you want to save money, why don't we go to single glazing?
Yeah, you've said that before.
Yeah.
And it's always like, that's a really good point.
Yeah, just do it because it makes sense.
Yeah. And hey, energy models help anyway.
But we'll get to that too.
So three.
Don't cross that bridge when you come to it.
That's right. We're talking about thermal bridging, of course, here, guys. So, and, you know, if you imagine 20% of your wall is probably structural stuff holding up other stuff, you know, if 20% of it is wood studs, that's 20% of your wall that's not insulation. And if you have that connected to your sheathing and connected to your sheetrock on the inside, boy, that is 20% of your wall that is working against you. That is a thermal bridge, you know. And it's more than just your wall. It's also your floor joists, your sheathing, all that jazz. So come up with some details, and, you know, you don't need to take it from us, you know, directly. I mean, there's strapping on the outside. There's strapping on the inside. There's wrapping the whole building in a continuous, you know, exterior insulation.
And, you know, where I find that a lot of rookies make the mistakes have to do around the windows and the rim joists.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's easy to do a little wall section and say, hey, look, I did it.
Yeah.
I got double stud, or I've got rigid insulation on the outside, but then they blow.
Now stick a window in
stuff.
It. Yeah.
So that's where you need to be careful and pay attention to it. You know, look at your details. Look at all your joints.
Right.
Because from here on out, every house that you do, you're going to be looking at those details.
Right. And I think in our slideshow, we've got a couple of photos that I think I took on the way down to NESI, the NESI conference, of, you know, snow melting where, you know, on the outside, you can actually see the the rafters on the outside.
I like to call it lines of failure at 24 inches on center.
Beautiful, Phil.
You know, it's just...
Did you come up with that?
I did.
No, you are the man.
Every now and then I score one.
Yeah, that's good. Even a stop clock tells the right time twice a day.
All right, what do we have for number four, Chris?
Number four, belts, suspenders, and clean underwear.
Redundancy.
That's right. Yeah. And basically by that, you know, I was always taught your building will fail. It will fail, just like you're going to die, Phil. I'm sorry.
I'm a little sad.
You know, it's okay.
I try not to think about it.
You're going to die. I'm going to die.
Yeah.
The building, every building you've ever made is going to crumble and be dust later. So deal with it. The whole planet's going to be consumed in a big ball of fire, and our sun's going to expand. But don't worry, you got 50 million years or whatever. But So what I'm saying, Phil, is your building's going to fail. And what you want to do is make sure that it can draw. It can be resilient enough to take that failure.
I feel a little angry that you told me my building's going
to
fail right now.
Well, here, I'll speak. Hey, everybody, my buildings are going to fail one day. No, it's just the nature. You build your house. You build your buildings not to fail, and you build them to deal with a failure when they do fail.
Yeah.
And what are we talking about? We're talking about simple things like...
Yeah, just simple things like getting your flashings right.
Right.
You know, flashing your window properly.
Right, like sometimes...
Lapping things positively.
Right. Well, I'll have a head flashing and then a flashing under that, you know, at the window... you know, like the trim, you know, the siding comes down and at the trim we've got flashing and then, you know, the window itself has flashing. So it's like these built up layers of redundancy that we have.
Mm-hmm. Rain screens, you know, that's part of this.
Yeah, exactly. Thing. Exactly. You design a system to keep the water out and then you design a system to drain the water when it does get in.
Mm-hmm. Overhangs.
Overhangs, the simplest thing in the world. And you know what? We argue in the office, my business partner and I, because, you know, he...
Harry likes the sleek look, doesn't he? Jesse likes the sleek look.
I know.
Okay,
you get it all the time. These beautiful architectural things where it's just like this gable.
Damn,
it's
architect.
It's like we take this house form of the gable and then we just, you know, just like these super clean edges. And I, you know, I love it and I respect those clean edges and pure forms, and I'm like, yeah, and you just aged the building 20 years just by boom. Just didn't even...
There was a reason why we put them there in the first place.
Exactly. Vernacular architecture looks the way... You gotta respect it, even though we as architects kind of like to fight it.
That's right.
But that's what it is.
Yeah, just relax and make it look good.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, number 5.
Group hug. Get off me, Phil. Stop hugging me.
A.K.A. Don't wait to integrate.
Don't wait to integrate.
Get your group together right away. If we're going to make great buildings, we got to do them together. We have to have everyone at the table day one. And we've spoken about all these things, Chris, but even in small projects, if you can get your client and your builder, your architect, and some of your top subs.
Yeah, some people bring...
At the same time.
Right. So, yeah, exactly. Some people bring builders on at certain points, but the real point is... You gotta bring them in before it's too costly to start making these changes. From the inputs that they could actually give you. If you're an architect out there thinking you know everything and the builder should do whatever you drew and just shut up and do it, you're gonna be served a big slice of humble pie one day. Because we're all... I mean, I've learned great stuff from builders. I don't know about you, Phil.
I do. All the time, we learn great things. You know, and if you think, hey, my design is going to be hurt by involving these people early on, then you're not a good architect.
No, you got a real
problem. I'm serious.
Yeah, I am too.
You know, get your damn ego out of the way.
Yeah.
And say, I can design something beautiful with parameters. If you can't, you shouldn't be in this profession.
That's right.
All right, so do the right things first. Team up with your people.
There's cost implications. There's performance implications. There's everything. So, yeah, and I love having the subs involved. If you've got a, you know, like before the pour of the concrete, or especially if there's a finished slab that's going to be, the actual floor finish, having a meeting with everyone involved in that and saying, look, guys, you know, seriously, no coffee on this job. No, you know, or maybe not so strict, but it's like, you know, this slab is precious.
Mm-hmm.
You mess it up, you've been warned. So, all right, number 6, Phil.
Do your modeling before the runway.
Nice, yeah. Yeah, we like this slide because we put it up and we're like, look at that.
That's a good-looking spreadsheet.
That's right. No, and what we're talking about there...
That is a hot ACH50.
Oh, my God, yeah. Look at the solar gain on that one.
Oh, man.
Beautiful. Anyway, we're talking about learning... What your house is going to do before you actually, you know, do it.
That's right.
Energy models are important and they're a great effective tool. And usually if you don't do it in house, I bet there's companies out there that can do it for you for a reasonable price. And it's a pretty easy sell for us to convince our clients that, hey, you know, for maybe $1,600, $2,000 even,
mm-hmm.
you can team up with a company that'll get you Energy Star certified, but you'll get a REM rate model, which will help us you know, choose mechanical systems, you'll get inspections midway through and final blower door test and maybe a mid construction blower door test. But basically, you have a sense of where you're headed with your energy performance of your house, and you can play the cost offset game, Phil.
Yeah. Can I tell you a dirty little secret, Chris?
Oh, yes.
You know, maybe
those are the best.
Maybe this is not for the Sprouts, okay?
Right, okay. All right, Sprouts, go do something else. We just want to talk to the real green guys.
We still do our energy model for every project.
Yeah.
We're not doing them as early now.
When are you doing
them? We're doing these to double check.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the time now, it's not affecting what we do because we've done enough of these that we have a really good sense of where we're headed to the point where the only difference it's going to make is the size of the heat pump.
Yeah.
That's it. We just may have to size it a little differently. We know how much glass we need on the south. We know if it's a different orientation, then we're probably going to have to pay attention to it in a different way.
Yeah.
We still do it, but if you do all these other right things...
Right.
Ironically, it matters a little less.
No.
How do you feel about that?
Can I tell you something?
Yes. Just between you and me, okay?
All right, just you and me. And
let's just whisper to me.
I'm almost the same way.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean, intuition gets you... I say this to my clients. Intuition and experience gets us about 95% of the way there. And then the other 5% is
it's pure bullshit.
Well, no. but it's right now, yeah. I have clients who they want to twist the project to face more west because that's where the view is. Mm-hmm. And we will be playing the game of as you face west, you know, and seriously, it's like, as you rotate west, you're going to lose efficiency, but how much? You know, with an energy model, we can answer this. We can rotate 10 degrees. Yeah. That's going to cost you $200 a year.
Right. And you can say, all right, so we're going to be worried about overheating a little bit more now.
Right.
Yeah, more glass to the west.
Exactly.
Now we can know these things.
Right. So is your view worth $200 a year? Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
Then boom. And so that's their answer, and they get it. Or is your view worth $1,200 a year?
You can be smart and you could go into this and answer it with intelligently and
with gut instinct and all that stuff.
It's really good and you look really damn smart.
Right, but I'll throw in for the existing house that you're doing renovations to. Yeah, energy modeling can really help because you get an audit of the existing structure and that helps. All right, let's move on, buddy. Number 7.
Bigger is not better.
What do you mean by that, Phil?
AKA, toe dipping will leave you all wet.
Yes, that's right.
Do we overclever ourselves?
Yeah.
On that one?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
That's a little too much. But anyway, so tell us about that.
All right, so the toe dipping problem is something that I'd like to believe is going on less and less these days, but I'm not 100% sure.
I think it does. And that's like... you know, you hear about, you want to be green, so let's put on a layer of insulation on the outside. Or let's do a solar panel or two or something like that. If you're not actually digging into your house in terms of what you're doing by performance, you can find this sweet spot, we've talked about it before, where you've increased the insulation by so much that now you can reduce the mechanical systems.
That's right. That's when you're the real hero. If you don't get to that point, if you say, all right, I just want better windows and I want a fancier boiler.
Yeah.
All right, that's more efficient and I'm adding insulation.
Yeah. And you weren't able to...
That was really expensive, yeah.
Yeah, and if you're not able to actually recoup that by reducing your mechanical system, fired. You're fired.
You're a chump.
You're a chump, and you just cost more money. And now you made it kind of a grumpy client. But if you actually do enough, if you stop toe dipping and dive in...
Hero.
You just saved them money.
Yeah.
And in the long run, and they love you.
And, you know, it's people who are not doing this is actually, it's really hurting the industry. It's finally coming around. I think people are getting smarter, but this is why people say, I want it a little green, but not too green. The problem is that if you don't go to that next step and get to that level where you can reduce the mechanical system, you know, it's a problem.
Yeah.
You're in trouble.
All right. Number 8,
We're going to do a full podcast on this, Chris?
Oh, you know what? Maybe we ought to do... Let's do it in parts. Let's do it in parts. I'm looking at the time. We're like 25. So we're into this thing. So let's do... But don't worry, folks. We're going to post part one and two almost simultaneously, so you don't have to wait with anticipation. So all right. Let's call this part one. Freshen up the drinks and let's get going, buddy.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That's it for this part of the episode. Be sure to tune in next week for more from the Green Architects Lounge podcast. A quick reminder that our theme music is Zelda's theme from Perez Prado, and that the views and drinking habits of the hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Green Building Advisor. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and keep up the good work.